Blog Talk Radio.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas on Sunday, July 28th. As we like to do on Sundays, we'll be chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. I had my agenda prepared for today, and I thought we were going to be primarily talking about the week of Mr. Mueller coming to Washington and, of course, a new prime minister up in the UK. But President Trump always has a way of putting something on the news, and he got into a fight with Representative Cummings of Baltimore, so we'll be talking about that. We'll be talking about the Democrats. I guess they have a debate coming up this week. I'm not sure whether it's CNN or CBS, one of those two. I don't quite remember. The Democrats are internally having a lot of problems, absolutely a lot of problems, and one of them is about impeachment. I think the people who got them the majority do not want the impeachment. The people who are part of the left-wing crazy minority, they want impeachment. So I think there's going to be a lot of problems here for Nancy Pelosi over the next 12 months. Let me say hello to our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Bill, it is hot, very hot in North Texas. How is it up in New York?
I checked an hour ago, and it was 91.
Oh, wow. That's pretty warm.
It is pretty warm. It does get hotter. Mm. We had last weekend a roaster. But the temperatures have not been out of control here, unless you listen to the Al Gore weather station, which is a weather station near here, in which people can get all kinds of gear. They can get water wings, so because when the oceans flood the area, they can swim. But the actual, what we do is we do get some of these scorching days. But then it goes down to the usual level, and I don't think people have actually seen any great difference in the last 5 years between that and what they saw, like 20 years earlier. It's I think people have some serious questions about these predictions of doom that come to us every time the federal budget has to be given out.
Well, I saw this article the other day about all the predictions that Al Gore made that have not come true. But I also remember, what was that movie, Bill, The 7-Year Itch? Wasn't that movie that Marilyn Monroe made?
Yes,
about the guy who stays behind. And then I remember several scenes where it was like humid, terribly hot in New York, and how hot it was in New York. But nobody blamed it on anything other than Somerville.
No, we've had many popular songs dealing with the weather. And they were written, 40, 50, 60, 70 years ago. It's too darn hot. We're having a heat wave. Irving Berlin wrote that one. Too darn hot was written by Cole Porter. Stormy weather. by Harold Arlen and this is not the first time we've encountered weather.
Summer in the City. I remember that one by the Loving Spoonful.
Of course. And there used to be a saying, when I grew up, at least in New York City, that it was so hot that you could fry eggs on the pavement. And it was a very common saying. Now, apparently, they have erased all those records, and they're trying to convince us that summers in New York, well, people were wearing heavy coats, skating on the ice in Central Park, and only in the last 20 years has this changed. It's not true.
No, I'm sure it's not true because, all kinds of songs and all kinds of stories about how hot it was in the summer everywhere, not just New York, everywhere. It was very hot. Well, Bill, I mentioned that President Trump and Representative Cummings have gotten into a battle. And, sometimes President Trump tends to overdo it. But I also think that, you know, he gets criticized very heavily by people. And this gentleman, Mr. Cummings, he's a partisan Democrat, and that's fine. You can
yes.
be partisan. But if you're going to be a partisan Democrat, you have to be willing at least – you have to understand that people are going to throw stuff back at you to defend themselves. And he has said a lot of things about President Trump. And then on top of that, he represents a district which is a disaster, the city of Baltimore. I mean, I know people who live there, and everybody wants to get the heck out of Baltimore. Nobody wants to live in his district, Bill.
No, that's very, very true. I mean, the stories that have come out of Baltimore in the last few years have been horrendous. Now, some of those stories were probably prompted by the Obama administration, which had actually given the Baltimore police a high rating when the administration came into office, and then later, after this Freddie, I forgot his name, I can't remember his name, Freddie whatever, it was a African-American who was arrested, and on his way to police headquarters in a police van, he died. And there was this big uproar, it was brutality, it was this, it was that. Well, his death is unfortunate, but this changed the whole atmosphere. The Baltimore police were immediately tagged as a racist department. The department started to fall apart. Police officers trying to do their jobs were harassed. Ridiculous public officials came to the fore, including several mayors who could not do the job or would not or engaged in acts of corruption. They had a state's attorney who, when dealing with the six officers who were arrested in terms of the death of this young African-American, she said, "I hear your voices," meaning the voices of the people. Well, you're not supposed to hear their voices. You're supposed to hear only the evidence. And ultimately, as you know, those six officers who were arrested and charged for one degree or another with the death of this man were all acquitted by a black judge. And then there were several mayors who engaged in acts of corruption. The city just began to develop the image, not of Charm City, which is its slogan, but of a place coming apart at the seams. And all the president was doing was talking about that. Now,
right.
We know that Bernie Sanders went to Baltimore and called it a third world city, and nobody
mm-hmm.
said anything about it.
Right.
But as soon as President Trump said anything, racist, I don't think the people in Baltimore who are living under these circumstances think his comments were racist at all. They probably are saying it's about time somebody noticed.
Well, I think you're right. First of all, most of these cities, it's hard to find a white politician in any of these districts. I mean, you
yes.
can go to Baltimore, the entire city council, all of the representatives who represent these districts, both at the federal and at the state level, are black, so it's kind of difficult to play the race card. And I'm not going to blame everything on Representative Cummings. He can only do so much. But you would think that he would pay as much attention to his district as he does to the U.S.-Mexico border bill.
Yes, well, he is one of these fairly typical members of Congress, and you find them from many, many districts, especially big city districts that are predominantly African-American. You have
mm-hmm.
Maxine Waters, mm-hmm. Known as Auntie Maxine, in Los Angeles, who doesn't even live in her district. And you have other members of Congress who've never done a thing for their district. I mean, you have in Chicago a city emergency of unbelievable proportions with people being killed right and left, and the members of Congress don't lift a finger. They don't say a word. And they keep on getting reelected. And they get reelected because they come out with this narrative, the leaders do, that if you don't elect this person, you're going back into slavery.
Yes. No, you're right. And then they, you know, they keep telling the people in this district that it's because of Republicans or it's because of white Republicans. But didn't we just have 8 years of a black president?
Yes.
I mean,
we did. He didn't do a thing.
Yeah. So I'm sitting, you know, I cannot tell you my gut feeling tells me that President Trump has an ability to touch certain nerves in the country. And I think that he instinctively is usually right. And I think he's beginning to realize, look, you know, I can wake up some of these voters because I know these representatives are not popular. And all you have to do is look at the turnouts in these elections.
Yes.
I mean, you saw this in the Bronx with this young woman who was elected in the Bronx. The turnout for Baltimore elections is like that, Bill. Nobody votes.
That's right.
The people don't vote.
That's
so
right.
I think that tells you a lot about what they think of the politicians, Bill.
Oh, absolutely. Well, in the case of AOC, the one from the Bronx, the turnout was 18%. And these are not, I should point out, these are not turnouts in general elections. These are in primaries, which is where the decision is really made. These are districts where a ham sandwich could be elected to Congress. All he had to do was have the letter D next to his name. I mean, these are very safe Democratic districts. So if you win the primary, the Democratic primary, in effect, you've won the election. And that's how she got to be a congresswoman. I mean, she won a Democratic primary. And as I said, the turnout was 18%. I believe that the actual percentage of Democratic voters who voted for her was like 8%. And that's the way the game is played. Now, Nancy
yeah.
Pelosi is aware, and the reporters tell us, that the way the Democratic Party took over control of the House of Representatives in 2018 was not with radicals like this. It was with moderates. In
That's
districts
right.
that Trump had won, they ran moderate candidates. The moderates convinced the voters that they weren't crazy, and they won enough seats to get back into control of Congress. I think the Democratic Party may have trouble holding the House
mm-hmm.
if it continues
yes.
on its current course.
That's right. The Republicans only have to pick up 18 or 19 seats,
yes.
and they would have the majority back. But in many of these districts, Bill, if you remember, many of these so-called moderates who were elected, many of them ran actually saying they're not going to support Nancy Pelosi as Speaker.
Yeah.
I mean, many of the ones that were running
that's
that
right.
won many of these districts said, you know, we're not supporting Nancy Pelosi if we win. So it's not like, you know, they went in there, you know, very much to follow Nancy Pelosi. I think at the end they were able to work out some kind of a deal and she became the Speaker. But if there had actually been a real vote based on the promises that they made during the campaign, I don't think she would have gotten the majority vote.
I think that's absolutely correct. Look, I think that the Democratic strategy in the 2008 races was very good. It was very solid and
mm-hmm,
very
sure.
Appreciative of the way people actually vote. The right now, the so-called progressives, I always love that word because they're really
yeah.
regressives. They want to go back to the 1960s. The so-called progressives have a lot of power. They have scare power. They don't actually
mm-hmm.
have voting power. Pelosi made the point that these four women who are at the center of action really are just four votes, and they are often alone. But they have scare power. They can scare people in the Democratic Party into the idea that if you don't go along with us, we will primary your representative, challenge that person in the primaries, and nobody
mm-hmm.
knows what will happen in a primary because not too many people vote.
That's right. Yeah, you don't need many to show up to make a difference, as happened with AOC in that district in New York. But I personally would love to see – you know, I love to see some of these Democrats who represent these districts, they need to be challenged and held accountable for the conditions of their districts, because these districts are in terrible conditions. The public schools are in terrible condition. They're having a very hard time finding police officers because nobody
yes.
wants to be a police officer there. So, I mean, if you look at these communities, they're in terrible shape, and it's a great disservice to the voters in those communities, to the citizens in those communities, primarily African-American. It's a great disservice to them that these communities are run the way they're run and that nobody seems to care about it, Bill.
Well, that's it. And you know, what's also true is that there are a lot of manufactured issues. The great civil rights movement that we saw in the early 1960s really ended years ago, and it became basically a business, which is what it is today. You have a lot of problems in these communities that are not going to be solved by just yelling racist at anybody who runs
mm-hmm.
against you. You have a lot of situations in schools where problems can be solved if thoughtful people address them. But when you get these fanatics addressing them, and race industry people, and by the way, many of the people who are in the race industry are not African American, they're whites. They're these
mm-hmm.
white so-called progressives who believe that they are on the side of the angels because they come out and grovel. They talk about their white privilege. They talk about how terrible they are because they were born white and how badly they feel about it. They can't look in a mirror. They want to leave. They don't know if they have the right to be alive. These are the people who really give sustenance to a lot of these crazy ideas on the political left that really don't help people of color. They actually hurt them, but they sound good at the time.
Right. Well, that's it. That's it. And I wish that we would be as thoughtful about we would spend as much energy developing or making the public schools better in many of these districts as we do bringing down statues. You know, okay, so we bring down a statue of Lee. Okay, great. So we feel good about that. But what does that do to the parent sending a kid to a lousy school? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. The school is still there.
That's right.
And the kid's getting no education. So how are we helping, you know, black kids getting an education so that they can get ahead in life? We're not, Bill.
We're not helping them at all. And here in New York, which is a kind of an educational center, we watched as the great New York City school system, the greatest urban school system in the United States, was destroyed by crazy
mm-hmm.
ideas put out by crazy people. And this was in the 1960s. And if you said anything about it, you were a racist. They
right.
demanded, the black leadership demanded community control of schools. Well, we didn't have community control of schools. We had a Board of Education and a 110 Livingston Street, which was the headquarters of the Board of Education. And they ran it from there. There were problems. There were administrative problems. There was, a certain amount of hackery. But on balance, it was a very, very good educational system. And it was destroyed. And the demand of black leaders for community control was nothing more than a demand for patronage control over the hiring of teachers. It had nothing to do with the children. And yet there were plenty of white people who went along with it. It wouldn't have passed without white votes in the legislature. But that is the game that is played. And it did not help African-American youngsters one bit.
No, it doesn't. And it doesn't help. It's not helping them at all. And the city of Baltimore is a disaster. And it's Representative Cummings is not doing anything about it. Again, I'm not blaming mm-hmm. everything on him, but he's not doing much to make the city better. He's not doing much to make those schools better. He should support choice so that the parents can choose a school, for example, for their kids. He should, be willing to do that so that the parents can choose a school. But he doesn't, because that would mean going against the teachers' union, and you can't do that if you're a black Democrat.
This
is the problem,
That's the point.
Yeah.
When I was a little kid, I went to school in New York City school system before we moved to Long Island, and that was a system that people just didn't appreciate how good it was. The teachers were mostly Irish,
mm-hmm.
and they were the literary Irish. These teachers knew their subjects like nothing you've ever seen, and they expected to be treated with respect. When you addressed a teacher in the classroom, you stood up. There were all those middle-class values that are laughed at today, and they worked. And the teachers themselves were highly respected. I remember back in when I had a job for several years as a camp counselor in upstate New York during the summer, a very, fairly common job for college students. And many of the people who worked there were New York City teachers, and how much I admired them. I mean, what they had to go through to become a New York City teacher, the standards were so high. They had to go through boards. It was an honor to be a New York City teacher, and that was all destroyed also. And you had teachers teaching these minority youngsters, teachers who were wonderful teachers of English, and a lot of them were thrown out because they weren't the right race, and the people who came in were nowhere near as qualified. And what a sad thing for the students. They didn't get the chance to study under those great teachers. This racket has been going on for a long time.
Yeah, but if there's some good news in all of this, Bill, is that the people who are going on TV calling everybody a racist,
yes.
I don't think they're adding any votes to the Democrat tally. In other words, I think we're at a point right now where when people start calling people racist, I just tune it out. I don't even pay attention to it. I just either shut it off or delete the email. I don't pay attention to it because it's just a bunch of crap. And I don't think
go ahead.
No, what I was going to say is that I don't think that the Democrats, whoever the nominee is going to get a lot of votes by saying everybody who voted for Trump is a racist. They're going to get the votes they have already, I suppose, but they're not going to bring in the people they have to get to win these states. That's just my feeling. And again, Trump is Trump, and he does a lot of things that are great. His style bothers a lot of people. It bothers me from time to time. I wouldn't have gotten into a fight with these four women 2 weeks ago because the party was destroying itself. Leave them alone. Let them destroy themselves.
Yes.
So I think sometimes he steps into the middle of a fight that he doesn't have to, Bill. But at the same time, he often says a lot of things that make a lot of sense. And with Representative Cummings, I agree with what he's saying, Bill.
I do, too. I have gotten a few complaints from some of my readers because I did make a harsh remark about the president's rhetoric. And they say, what are you talking about? I fully agree with what you said, that he is right. And the other part of what you said I agree with also is that he gets into these fights he doesn't need. He could have expressed himself in a way that didn't arouse ire. You know, the greatest way of burying the truth is to get people angry. Then the truth doesn't mean anything anymore. They're all angry at each other. He could have expressed his feelings about Representative Cummings and about the conditions in Baltimore without the kind of, you know, humiliating language that he used. That's David Axelrod, who was one of Obama's chief political advisors and a man I respect. I don't agree with him politically, but he's a good political observer and operative. He said if Trump loses next year, it's going to be because of this kind of rhetoric. And he's right. He states a perfectly good point, a point that probably most black people would agree with, but he sometimes gets too volatile. You don't have to refer to an area as rat-infested. You can just say, well, children have sometimes seen rats. That's not acceptable to us. I mean, you can soften it a little while getting the message across, and it's the way Reagan did it, you know, and he did it so well. And by the way, Reagan was also accused of racism rather constantly.
Oh, yes.
You know, it was all you had to do was complain about the welfare system and you were racist. And the fact is the Democrats wouldn't be doing it unless it was effective. If it changes 5% of the vote in their direction, that's a big success. And if it frightens enough African Americans to come to the polls, it's a big success. So to them, they know they may not do too well with this kind of language in winning a few independents, but they will keep their base intact. And I guess to them, that's a good deal.
Well, they need to turn out. I think that's what it's all about. They need to turn out. They have to get a huge turnout, and I think that's why they do these things. But I am happy to see President Trump confronting some of these politicians saying, hey, you know, you represent districts that are falling apart. Why don't you do something about those districts? Because they run everything in those districts. They're the ones who appoint the jobs. They're the ones who run the districts. And they're absolutely a disaster, Bill, just a total disaster.
They are.
Yes,
and,
I agree with you that the language could be better, but I also feel like I I'm going to say something in defense of President Trump. I sometimes understand his frustration because everybody's calling him names, saying terrible things about him, and it has to really bother him, Bill, when they call him a racist. And the reason it has to bother him, because I don't think he is. And if you look at the way he spent money over the years, he gave a lot of money to Jesse Jackson when he ran for president.
Yes, right.
And he's given a lot of money to black causes and in the city of New York. And all of a sudden now he's a racist because he defeated Hillary Clinton. That's got to bother him. And I understand the frustration from his side of the equation, Bill.
I do, too. It must be horribly frustrating to become president and have the entire press against you and making up stories and this crazy investigation, which culminated this week in the appearance by Mr. Mueller, who sounded as if he, you know, really was on thin ice, and to live under the constant investigation. And now the Democrats want to start a new one. And now the line as of today is the Mueller testimony was perfectly good and very devastating. I mean, the line changes from day to day. They go along with it. They're going to have an inquiry into impeachment. They will probably have an impeachment vote, and it is quite possible the president will be impeached. I would not underestimate that possibility because all you need is a majority. I mean,
that's right. They
got to
get 218. Well, they got to get with 218 of the whatever 240 they have. So
yes,
they might be able to
means...
get it. Bill, let me take a break, and then when we come back, we'll get into Mueller, because there's a lot about his appearance that I want to get into with you.
Okay.
We're going to take a little break, and we'll be right back with our friend Bill right after this. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Bill, before we took a break, we started talking about Mr. Mueller, and he came to town and he gave his presentation. And by the end of the day, a lot of people were wondering how involved or how engaged Mr. Mueller had been, because he sounded like a guy who didn't know much about the report, Bill.
That's true. He also sounded like a guy who was not medically quite ready to testify before Congress. I mean, he seemed much older than he actually is. He's only 74.
Yes.
And he seemed forgetful, not fully in charge of the material, as you said, and maybe not fully in charge of the investigation. He certainly didn't sound like the kind of a guy who would put in charge of an important investigation like this. I mean, everyone called it a disaster until today. Until today, apparently the Politburo met in Washington, and Premier Stalin handed down the order that the Mueller testimony was now to be regarded as incredibly good and revealing and very disturbing to the American people. You know, forget your lying ears. I mean, this is what it really is. And they're now going to that line, that in fact there's a great deal there. There isn't a great deal there. And they're going to now have an impeachment inquiry. The American people do not want it, although one Fox poll said that they did. I would question that. And they will now, what is it, August? Well, by the time Congress comes back and really goes into session, this is going to go into the election year. And all it's going to look like is a political stunt for the election year. Now, as we have said, it still could result in an impeachment. In fact, in an election year, the heat may really be on the Democrats to vote for it. All you need is a majority vote on articles of impeachment, and the president is impeached. That simply means he is charged. He will be tried by the United States Senate. There you would need 67 votes to convict him, and I don't know where those 67 votes come from. Now, it is true that when Nixon faced this in the early 1970s, he resigned because he said he didn't want to put the country through an impeachment. And that may have been completely genuine, because he had made sacrifices before. But it was also true that he didn't have that much support in his own party, the reason being that a crime had been committed, the Watergate crime, and he handled it so badly. And it is quite possible that had he been impeached, he might have lost. I don't recall what the split was in the U.S. Senate, but he might have lost. And today, though, you have a Republican Senate. You would need a number of Republicans to add. I don't know exactly what the number of Democrats is. I think it is probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 47.
It's 53-47 right now. It's 53-47.
Yeah.
So they would need They would need 19 Republicans to turn over, because they need 67, right? So they have 47. They would need 20 Republicans if 20 Republicans were willing to convict President Trump, let's say, if it went to the Senate, there would have to be a crime. There would have to be evidence of a crime. And I don't see any, Bill. I mean, this is my problem with all this impeachment talk. What exactly is the article of impeachment going to say?
I keep asking,
so you want to impeach him. Okay, impeach him about what? What is the article of impeachment? Obstruction of justice? Okay, where?
Yes. Well, what Democrats may be hoping for, and this could happen. This could happen. They may be hoping for a change in public opinion if there's a smoking gun, if there's one horrible incident that is either on tape or some turncoat in the Trump administration comes forward and said, I saw this happen, and it changes public opinion. And Republican senators, there are 22 Republican senators up for re-election, and enough Republican senators say, you know, I have to vote against him, especially if polls in his district show that, people are leaning the other way. They're not, as a group, the most courageous in the world. And it is quite possible that if something is found that can be turned into a smoking gun by a cooperative press, this could go out of control. It really could.
Yeah, it could. I mean, again, all of that is possible, but it could also go the other way, that they look so foolish that a lot of the moderate Democrats who are running for re-election in 2020 don't want to touch this thing. I don't look, Bill, we have a couple of Democrats who won districts here in Texas, and I don't think any of them want to spend 2020 talking about impeachment. I really don't. I don't think that's a winning issue for them, not just here, but I think in many other places, though.
I think it is. And, you know, again, we talked about just a minute ago the possibility of some smoking gun somewhere that changes public opinion. With all the investigations that have been conducted so far, nothing has turned out. I mean, I don't know where the smoking gun comes from. the way the Democratic Party operates, and you see it in the way they treated Justice Thomas and Justice Kavanaugh, they always bring forward somebody at the last minute to make a charge. And it could be that they'll do that again and start basically an electoral riot. That can be done. I'd point out that there have only been two impeachment trials in American history, Andrew Johnson and Bill Clinton, the incumbent survived both of them. I don't see where, after all this investigation, that smoking gun can come from, unless somebody at the last minute, who no one's ever heard of. I mean, it could be Monica Lewinsky's hairdresser, who comes forward and says at the last second, I saw this happen, and that may be the way they operate. But you know, show me.
Yeah, I mean, I keep coming back. You know, I see all these polls saying 35%, 40%, whatever the number. There was an ABC poll that came out that contradicted the Fox News poll. So, well, you know, we can believe whatever you want to believe, but the ABC poll basically said that the hearings didn't do anything. If you wanted to impeach Trump, you still do. If you didn't, you didn't. So it didn't really add any votes to it one way or the other. I think the biggest problem for Mr. Mueller and impeachment in general was his lackluster performance. Had he been a stronger witness, then maybe, you know, something could have happened. But I mean, anybody watching that, I mean, I actually felt sorry for Mr. Mueller because he, as you say, didn't look good and didn't seem that interested in what he was doing, Bill.
I'm afraid that's correct. I mean, you. I hate to use the term doddering old man, but that's what he sounded like, and that's not the Bob Mueller we used to know. I mean, when he was head of the FBI, he was a war hero in Vietnam. But there are apparently some elements, people who've come forward, at least to reporters on a background basis, and said that when he was running the investigation, he would go home early. He did not work the full days that he did when he was at the FBI. Seemed detached, and I think that the Democrats made a mistake in bringing him forward like this. But again, at the end, you never know what can happen when these things get out, if these things get out of control. Remember that Trump has the entire press against him, and they cannot wait to see the first president removed from office and feeling that they had a role in it.
Yeah, I mean, all of that is exactly right, Bill, and it could very well happen. But if I had to bet you a cup of coffee, which is all I usually bet, I think it's not going to make a difference, because I don't think the public is interested unless something very dramatic comes out. And if that dramatic information was out there, I think it would have come out already, Bill. I just have a hard time believing that some Democrat out there has this information and he or she is holding it back. I just don't think they would. I think they would come out with it right now, Bill.
I think you're absolutely correct. But, you know, I we don't. I don't trust the news media to get it right, and I don't trust the Democrats to get anything right. And I have to say that there are Republicans who don't like Trump. They want the Trump era to pass, and they may just gang up. So
we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. But I don't think last week was a winner for the Democrats. I'll just put it that way.
I think that's true. I think that's true.
I mean, if we were looking at some kind of a score, I don't think they took any step forward last week. I think last week was a bad week for the report, and it was a bad week for impeachment. Something could happen next week, as always, but I don't think so. At least that's my gut feeling, Bill.
Well, I think you're right, and the fact is, also, that we ought to note it, is that we are taking these polls and taking these soundings more than a year before the nominating conventions, not just the election. I mean, anything can happen in the next year. Biology could take its course. Some world event could occur. The economy could collapse. That's something I'm very concerned about. Remember that right before the 2008 election, what was it, 6 weeks? There was this economic collapse. I have always wondered about that. I have no evidence. I don't make any charges, but the coincidence was pretty remarkable. That just before the election, again, that demo, you know, that last minute thing, the economy collapsed. McCain, who was the Republican candidate, didn't handle it well. He ran a very poor campaign anyway, and Barack Obama sailed into the White House on absolutely no real qualifications, and we had 8 years of nothing. So it could happen again. There is manipulation in the financial world. Again, I make no charges, but if you suddenly see an economic collapse right before the election, I would not assume that it was an accident.
Right. Well, I think you're right. I think a lot of people were very skeptical. I was, too, of that, you know, banking crisis 6 weeks before the 2008 election. I was very skeptical of it, and it probably did elect President Obama. No question about that. No question about that. But I'll say one more thing about this impeachment. There are debates within the party because Mr. Nadler and Mr. Schiff were singing a totally different tune this weekend, Bill.
Absolutely. I mean, there are several other things that have to be considered here, and that is that an impeachment can go very badly for the Democrats. If nothing turns up, on the other hand, they can take the long shot and hope that the long shot works. And again, I don't, you know, it's the oldest line. It ain't over until the fat lady sings. And something can come up at the last second. That's the Democratic Party playbook, that even if not true, you know, my fear is that the president can be impeached because the Democrats in the House panic and refuse to go against the new progressives. He can be tried in the Senate, and some crazy thing can come up at the last minute that isn't even true, but makes it appear that he committed a crime. The Republicans panic and remove him from office. And then he will demand, if it ever happens, to be tried for that. If it's a high crime, he's committed a crime. And what if the Justice Department refuses to prosecute him then? It will look like a cover-up. And then what if he is removed from office and is tried for a crime and is exonerated? Boy, what will that look like?
Well, I think our democratic system would have a lot of difficulties. Talk about a constitutional crisis. It would be
That's a crisis, whatever you call it.
No, I'm hoping that there are some serious Democrats out there who understand that this is a lot more than just about Trump. This is also about the country. And so I'm hoping that, you know, some serious Democrats will bring this party to its senses. Bill, let's talk a little bit about the new Prime Minister of the UK, Mr. Prime Minister Boris Johnson, who I just learned at lunchtime today, Bill, was actually born in the United States to British parents who were diplomats in the United States.
Yes.
I didn't know that. Did you know that?
Mm. I did not know it before today either.
Yeah, I just learned that today at lunchtime. There's a lady from Ireland that we were having lunch with, and she brought
Churchill had an American mother, Jenny Jerome. So, and much was made of that. They don't have the same rule in Britain that we have here. To here, to be president, you have to be a natural-born citizen of the United States, which means born in the United States. There are exceptions if you are the child of military officers or who are stationed overseas. You remember John McCain had to get a ruling on that because he was actually born, I believe, in the Canal Zone when his parents were stationed there, or his father was stationed there as a naval officer. I think there were even some questions raised about Ted Cruz, but I don't know if they were ever resolved. Yes, Boris Johnson is a very, very interesting man. It's going to be he's somewhat chaotic. Some call him the British Trump, which Trump likes to quote. He also has difficulty keeping his hair in place, and I think that they both should get a new barber. I cannot wait to see them together at a press conference. It's going to be so much fun to watch these two eccentrics in many respects. And Johnson is really an eccentric, but he is extraordinarily eloquent when he wants to be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he has that British style of speaking, but he can sometimes come off as a real kook. He is on our side. He's very pro-American. He is very pro-defense of the West, very pro-Britain. And his first job is to get Britain out of the European Union without damage. That is the job, the assignment that beat his predecessor, Theresa May, who is now out of office. And we'll have to see what happens. That's all. At least Britain is under the control of the Conservatives, because the Labour Party in Britain today is an absolute disgrace. And if they got power, that could really hurt us.
Yes, but they're already talking about, you know, Boris Johnson and Trump and white nationalism. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, I guess Boris Johnson will soon be called a racist too, Bill.
Oh, absolutely. It's coming. He has had some things to say in the past about Africans. That's coming, that he will be called a racist. And with his friend, the racist president of the United States, and their mutual friend, the racist prime minister of Israel, he's now being called a racist. This has now become the standard charge. No matter what you are, no matter who you are, even if you aren't alive anymore, you are a racist.
Yes, it's laughable, because I think a lot of, you know, it's like the kid who cried wolf. At some point, nobody listens to you.
Well,
I mean,
as I said earlier
in the show, when I hear it, I just tune it out. I just shut it off or delete the email. I don't pay attention to it, because it's such a ridiculous accusation. To say that everybody who voted for Trump was a racist, I guess, does that include 30% of the Hispanics who voted for him? Does that include 10% of the blacks who voted for him?
Yes.
I mean, where does this stop?
It doesn't, and I wish he would stop giving them ammunition with inflammatory rhetoric.
Well, that's true, too.
The fact is, he isn't a racist. I mean, he had a career in New York, and he was a public figure for about 3 to 4 decades. If he were a racist, we would have known it long before now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it wouldn't have started when he ran for president. He makes highly charged comments, but the fact of the matter is there is no evidence whatever that he has racial animus. In fact, quite the opposite. He's done a good job for the African-American community. He did a good job as a builder and employing minorities. They keep on repeating the same charge, standard propaganda technique, over and over and over again.
But it doesn't fix any problems, like we said before. It
doesn't fix any problems.
It doesn't offer any solutions. And that's the idea, Bill. They don't have solutions, so they just call him a racist.
They don't have solutions, but notice the fact that when he does speak, you know, harshly, his Republican allies call him on it, which indicates that there is an anti-Trump vote in the Republican Party should something come up at an impeachment trial. That's what I'm concerned about. You know, he has the same problem Nixon had, in that neither man was popular with his party. Nixon was not a particularly popular figure within the Republican Party. He was seen as a retread who got elected in that horrible year of 1968. And even when he was elected with 49 states in 1972, it wasn't so much that he was elected, it was that George McGovern was rejected. And,
right,
but
right,
they,
exactly.
They never particularly liked him in the Republican Party. And you have a situation like that today. And I fear it, and I fear that we are being, some in the party, some in the Republican Party, are being just a little too smug about it.
Yes. Well, of course, if President Trump helps the Democrats help us sometimes with this, with some of their presidential candidates. They've got debate coming up this week, Bill. I guess it's CNN doing the debate. They're going to do the same format, 10 and 10. I believe that Beto O'Rourke will be invited, even though he has kind of disappeared. Mayor Pete has kind of disappeared as well. He's having a lot of problems back home. So my guess is that if they have the same lineup, the first night, I don't know who's going to watch it. I guess Elizabeth Warren is the only one that night, you know, over 5% in the polls. And the second night, I guess Mr. Biden will have another confrontation with Senator Harris or anybody else.
Yeah.
But we'll see how it turns out. But I guess it's right now, Bill, everybody says that Joe Biden has to have a good performance. I don't know. Maybe it's too early. But what do you think about that?
Well, you know, it's the debate will be on Wednesday night, I believe, in Detroit. People are saying pretty much what you're saying, that this is going to be a series of debates over two nights that's going to narrow the field, because according to Democratic Party rules, after this debate, the party will sit down and examine how much each candidate has raised, where they are in the polls, and that will determine who will be allowed to participate in the debate in September, which will be the first, after all, in a real election season, because these are summer debates, and that field will be smaller. And that's when you'll start seeing the real action. Once you get into September, well, the New Hampshire primaries are in February usually. Then you're getting into serious time issues. So I don't know who's going to come out ahead. Biden's support has fallen somewhat. But I think he could get it back if he puts in a good performance. He came off in the last debate as almost asleep. He came off as a man not quite prepared, but I suspect that will be corrected. I think he really wants the presidency. I think he also doesn't want to go down to a humiliating defeat. I think he will have answers for Kamala Harris. I think he'll have answers for Cory Booker. And he is still the only man who's seen as capable of beating Donald Trump. That will be a powerful argument, at least as of today. We don't know what's going to happen in a month. Everything could change. Something could come out about him. Something could come out about some of the others. So that's where we stand. I mean, it's right now, in a way, it's kind of infotainment. You know,
right,
it's more
exactly.
entertaining than it is anything else. But it is, you know, it's a time-honored form of entertainment, the great game of politics.
Yeah, but, you know, like you were saying, you know, so many things can happen, and I can think of no better example than the first President Bush, who at this time in 1991 was unbeatable. So unbeatable that, you know, heavyweights did not challenge him. You know, Cuomo decided not to run. Others decided not to run. And, you know, because they all thought he was going to be reelected easily. And then Ross Perot steps into the picture.
Yes.
And, you know, that with a little recession, all of a sudden, you know, in July of 1992, it looked totally different than it did in July of 1991, Bill. So many things could happen, like you say, over the next 12 months. I think, you know, if I could make a prediction, and I know we don't like to make predictions, but this is not so much a prediction as an idea. I think there's going to be a third party on the left. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to bring out, that's going to divide the Democrat vote. In other words, I still think Donald Trump will probably end up with the same vote, maybe a little better popular vote, that is, than he did the last time, maybe in the high 40s, maybe a little bit better than he did in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
I think the division is going to come on the other side, because I don't think that, you know, these four ladies, the squad, as they like to call it, I don't think that wing of the party is going to be happy with Joe Biden as the nominee, and they're going to demand that somebody else run, whoever it is, and that's going to divide the party. That's my theory, Bill, for whatever it's worth.
Well, I think it's a solid theory, and I also believe there could be a third party. I would say, though, that it, and again, it could derive from what actually happens in the Democratic Party during the next year. I think if the progressives, the so-called progressives, the crazies, start gaining, I think if they start challenging and primarying long-standing Democrats who are respected, that there could be a moderate center-left party that emerges. And some people you see in Congress today who are Democrats might join that party just to get away from the pressure.
Well, and get away from this craziness, too. I mean, I, there must be a lot of Democrats who are probably not happy with what they're watching. You know, resolutions against Israel, you know, calling Border Patrol agents Nazis. I just don't think a lot of Democrats buy into that bill. Some do, but I think the majority of Democrats are serious, more moderate people, and they're going to want somebody other than this crazy left that is running the party at the moment. Well, Bill, looking ahead at next week, anything in particular you'll keep an eye on? I think Congress is out of town, so not much will be happening in the Capitol, but, you know, government still goes on, Bill.
Well, I think that yes, there are important things. Well, of course, the Wednesday night debate that we just talked about. Also, let's not forget Iran. There is great tension in the area in Iran and the area around Iran. We don't know how that's going to resolve itself. Let's also not forget that both Iran and North Korea recently tested missiles in defiance of the United States. Now, the president says these are minor tests. They're not really that concerning. But they should be concerning to him for one reason, and that is the image is bad. You know, he's been telling us all along he has this great relationship with Kim Jong-un, that he has support on Iran, and yet they keep on defying him without any punishment. So that's a very, very important thing to watch, because it can result in a sudden flash that could be very, very serious.
Yes, and the British are sending some ships over there as well. I just saw that note today.
Yes, they're sending the Mayflower. No, not really.
No, I think they lost that one. Is in a museum, I think.
Maybe. that we are not getting the support from our allies that we deserve in the confrontation with Iran. The European Union just installed a new foreign policy boss who is worse even than the old one, who had been a veteran of the Italian Communist Party. This guy is from Spain, and I think he is a real old-time European diplomat. And that's not good for us. I think a lot of things could happen in the next couple of weeks, and we have to follow a number of different stories.
Yes, that's exactly right. And there's always that IG report that is supposed to be published one of these days.
That's right.
And that could be, you know, that could be the story of the rest of the year whenever that gets reported. Well, Bill, as always, thank you for your time. Enjoy the summer up in New York. And we'll get together again next week, and we'll see which one of these crazy stories is true.
Well, we will look at it, and no matter what's true, we will then ask the Democratic Party for their truth.
That's right. And by next week, we'll have the Democrat debate to talk about. We'll see what happens.
That's right.
We'll see what crazy idea Beto O'Rourke comes up with, because he's just crazy.
Yes,
yeah, he's just absolutely nutty.
Kook.
Absolutely.
I think he will come up with a plan for free mental health care for presidential candidates. He will be the first beneficiary.
That's exactly right. Well, Bill, as always, thank you for your time. It's always a lot of fun, and thank you for the great work you do at Urgent Agenda. We check it every day, and we enjoy very much your reporting and the stories that you cover over at Urgent Agenda. Thank you for the great work you do.
Thank you, Silvio. Talk to you next week.
Thank you. We'll do it again next week. Our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda, and we always touch base with him on Sundays and talk a little bit about the politics and what's going on. It's a lot of crazy stuff going on in our politics. I thought what Bill mentioned about Iran, though, that could be a huge story, because that could happen at any time. You know, you could have a confrontation at any time with Iran, and that, of course, would be a very big story. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.